with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the 23rd episode of Robots. In today's show, we take off for the moon with Professor William Red Whitaker, who is the director of the Field Robotics Center at Carnegie Mellon University in the U.S. Strong of the victory of his autonomous car at the DARPA Urban Challenge, Red is now pursuing an endeavor which seems even more out of reach. His team is currently working on sending a privately funded robot to our favorite satellite, the moon, and then having the robot travel 500 meters and transmit video, images, and data back to Earth. And all of this for a juicy $20 million Google Lunar X Prize.
And don't miss our online survey about your predictions concerning the timeline of Google's big challenge. But first, as always, here's Christine with the news.
Thanks, Sabine. Scientists at Aberystwyth University have created an artificially intelligent machine dubbed Adam the Robot Scientist. According to their paper published in Science, the laboratory robot autonomously generates hypotheses about the yeast Saccharomyces cerevisiae, or baker's yeast, and experimentally confirm these hypotheses using laboratory automation. As the authors point out, the basis of science is the hypothetical deductive method and the recording of experiments in sufficient detail to enable reproducibility. As confirmed by additional manual experiments without the robot, Adam has become the first machine to discover novel scientific knowledge. The researchers are now working on a second-generation machine named Eve that they hope will be much more efficient than Adam. Two new projects aim at reducing the noise of unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs. First, a team at Georgia Tech has analyzed the acoustic signature of piston engines of their own and a number of U.S. military UAVs using in-flight and ground-based tests. Their goal is to use acoustic signature control to make low-flying UAVs less detectable and improve the performance of their ground noise monitoring sensors. Second, a project sponsored by the U.S. Office of Naval Research aims at replacing noisy piston engines with fuel cells. In addition to reducing noise emissions, the new hydrogen-powered fuel cell design is also expected to provide significant improvements over earlier battery-powered designs. The Japanese Honda Research Institute, the Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute, and Shimatsu Corporation in Japan have jointly developed a non-invasive brain-machine interface to control a robot. The system uses a helmet equipped with electrodes to detect changes in cerebral blood flow and electrical potential in a user's head. As the user imagines themselves moving their left hand, right hand, tongue, or feet, Honda's Azimo robot performs corresponding gestures, such as raising its arms or legs in real time. According to Honda, an accuracy rate exceeding 90% was achieved in their tests. Now, Honda plans to further integrate this new technology into their current robotic systems. For more information and discussion on this week's news, including the robot scientist Adam, silent UAVs, and Honda's new brain-machine interface, visit the Robots Forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thanks, Christine. William Red Whitaker, who simply goes by the name Red, has been a driving force in field robotics, bringing robots out of the lab and into natural environments such as mines, volcano interiors, farms, nuclear facilities, hazardous waste sites, and now outer space. One of his best-known robots, which I'm sure you've already heard about, is an autonomous car capable of navigating in urban environments and even traffic. The car drove his Tartan racing team to victory in the 2007 DARPA Urban Challenge, and since then, Red has set his mind to a new type of competition. He'll be presenting his new endeavor, developing a lunar robot called Red Rover, capable of reaching the moon, traveling on its surface, and transmitting data to Earth. He'll be competing against many different teams from around the world to be the first to win the $20 million Google Lunar X Prize.
Hi, Red. Welcome to Robots.
Great pleasure to be with you.
Can you present yourself to our listeners?
My name is Red Whitaker. I am the father of field robots. These are machines that work in the world at large, not faked for success. They operate in mines, farms, security, defense, under the ocean, and out in space.
As you said, you're the father of field robotics, and you're actually the director of a center at CMU. Can you tell us a bit more about this center?
With creation of a movement like field robotics, there's a need to produce the technology, the people, the degrees, the institutions, ultimately the applications and the business. The Field Robotics Center is a premier institution for research, application, and pushing these robots out in the world.
And what is the motivation behind this, the research done there?
The idea of machines that work in the world is a tremendous context because you can imagine robots that work in nuclear cleanup or robots that work in construction or robots that would work in underground tunnels and mines and sewers. But imagining isn't the same as the robots in action. So that requires a research that develops the technology and integrates that into complete robot systems and then refines them to achieve performance and reliability and ultimately to achieve productivity and cost effectiveness. So that is the reason for the research and the reason for the center being in existence.
And concretely, what are the challenges brought on by bringing robots into natural environments?
When robots are in built environments like interiors and offices, they don't have to deal with weather, mud. They don't have to deal with other machines like traffic or, in the case of security, other combatants. The specific challenges are to deal with all environmental circumstances and all the geometries that are presented to a machine. For example, tunnels and sewers can be very tight and small. Forests and woodlands can be very difficult for a machine to maneuver, and traffic can be a very complex circumstance for a robot to reason about.
This is a long shot, but do you have a general recipe or generic principles which you can apply to solve these challenges?
I really approach problems in two ways. The first is to dwell in the need or the challenge and then to create whatever technology is needed. And that's the idea that necessity is the mother of invention. And if you need it and you pursue it and you dwell in the need, it is amazing what creation is possible. Now, the other is to dive deeply into a technology. And so that might be a technology for a robot to understand where it is, where it's going, and how to get there. By mastering navigation and position technology, that becomes a tool in the toolkit, and then is common to discover many things to do with it. If you can navigate, then you can get around in hallways. If you can navigate, you can get around in coal mines. If you can navigate, you can get around on trails and streets. And so the two approaches are very productive, and the two of them together are tremendously synergistic.
Maybe what do you mean by dwell in the need?
I approach some problems with a clear purpose. When cleaning up a nuclear accident, I dwell in what's required to clean it up. In racing robot cars, I dwell in what it takes to win. When pursuing a challenge like robotic farming, I ask, what does it take to plant and harvest, and to make that a focus of thinking, a focus of action, a consuming presence for everything that I do and everything that I think about. And then it is amazing what inventions and creations come of it.
Let's look at a concrete example. You're the leader of the Red Rover team, which is developing a lunar rover enterprise, basically in pursuit of the $20 million Google Lunar X Prize. Can you present, first of all, the competition to us?
The Google Lunar X Prize offers $20 million for a robot that sends television back from the moon. Then there are bonuses. A bonus for driving 5 kilometers, a bonus for launching from Florida, a bonus for visiting a historical site on the moon, like one of the Apollo landings, or a place where Russian hardware crashed. Other bonuses are for reviving after staying the cold lunar night, or a bonus for finding water. But the basic is to send television back from the moon.
This is an extremely ambitious project. How does one undergo such an enterprise?
Well, before technical achievements are accomplished, they always look like they are bold, and they always look like it is insurmountable to achieve them. So before Lindbergh flew from New York to Paris, the common belief is that it couldn't be done. Or before a computer defeated a human chess champion, the common belief is that a human will always prevail. But the moment that the technical accomplishment is delivered, that shifts instantly, and the belief is that there was never anything to it. So it's very common that these things look big when the reality is that they are achievable. It is not black magic or a defiance of physics. It requires ingenuity, commitment, team, vision, a lot of hard work, and some luck.
So speaking about the team, who's working on this project?
Another great thing about a competition is that it attracts and inspires participation, and that people love to work on it. Our Google Lunar X team has a mix of students, volunteers, staff, scientists, and people with experience in space missions and getting things done. It takes quite a mix of people to pursue a mission or a team goal. The adage is that to win, it takes a village, and that's definitely true of the XPRIZE.
I guess it takes some financing as well.
Every enterprise requires money, but it's never really about the money. For example, Lindbergh won a $25,000 prize for crossing the Atlantic Ocean, and I would have spent a few million dollars for winning a robot car challenge of a $2 million prize. But it doesn't all have to be cash. There are strategic partners. There are ways to acquire old equipment. There are ways to attract sponsors and contributions. So there's always a way for the money. In the case of our team's Google Lunar X Prize, we have created a company to pursue this. Astrobotic has a business plan that is attracting investment in order to win this prize, but more importantly, to establish a sustaining, profiteering business of robotic exploration of the solar system.
Okay, can you tell us more about Red Rover?
Red Rover is the spacecraft for our Google Lunar XPRIZE mission. It is about the size of a card table, shaped a little like a pyramid. One part of it is a solar array so that it can gather the power that's needed. One part of it is radiator so that it can keep itself cool in the blazing lunar sun. One part of it is a locomotion, driving mechanism that is wheels and suspension to get around. On top, it has tremendous cameras, because the XPRIZE requires high-resolution HD video and still imagery. It is connected to its own lander, and the robot has all of the computing, all of the sensing, all of the controls and communications to fly the lander. So if we think about the Apollo era, humans flew those landers down using a stick. And in our case, the robot will fly its lander down to the surface of the moon. Below the lander, there is rocketry to slow things down when we get to the moon. And below that, there is rocketry to get our spacecraft moving toward the moon. And below that is a launch vehicle that gets us up to orbit.
How do you actually test a lunar robot?
You can never really, really test the entire landing and robotic operation because it's not possible to simulate the combination of vacuum and low lunar gravity and the visual appearance of the moon's surface and the actual terrain that is encountered. So the tests are approximate. To test a lander, there are hover tests that take off from the ground, maneuver a little, and come back down. They can't be as long as the lunar landing because the Earth gravity is much higher than that of the moon. But they show the ability to balance and control and to do that effectively. The surface driving and the lunar robot portion of the mission can be tested to a much higher fidelity because it's possible to operate on moonscapes and simulated terrain and with lighting and vacuum tests that are approximately what is experienced on the moon.
You're currently on to your third version of the Red Rover. What have you learned along the way?
The first insight is that the robot design is governed by the thermal conditions on the moon, and that it's important to cool everything because otherwise it is a hot oven. And electronics don't do very well when things are so hot. The second is that there is not enough mass in a small mission to carry dual electronics, both for the lander and the rover. So the right solution is to design and develop one set of electronics and use them for both flying and for operating on the surface. So there's one power system that flies and drives. There's one computer that flies and drives, one camera system, one communication system, one thermal system that flies, and the same system is the one that drives. We've learned that achieving the space worthiness and the reliability in both the electromechanics and in the software is something that takes a great deal of development, testing, refining, redevelopment, retesting, refining, and that it is very iterative to achieve the quality that's needed for the mission.
Looking at the website of Google Lunar X, I saw a great number of different types of robots. I sort of thought space robots all looked the same, and I saw some crawling robots, some robots which looked like balls, snake robots. Why did you go for wheeled robots? Huh?
Well, I have the tremendous advantage of having developed dozens of robots in my career for many contexts, many applications. So I have a great experience with walking machines, which do not achieve the energy efficiency of a rolling machine. That is also true of a snake machine. A snake machine is capable of going through tight passages, but it uses a lot of energy to achieve that. Now, on the moon, we don't have to go through any tight passages, so there's not any motivation to use a snake or a worm. And then in a space mission, there is always a limit on the energy and power that is possible for operation. So you never want to waste a watt.
You also won the DARPA Urban Challenge in 2007. What did you learn from that experience, which you can use for the Google Lunar X Prize?
There is a tremendous learning from winning a technical prize that applies to pursuing a future technical prize like this Google Lunar X Prize for the Moon. The first principle is to be clear about a commitment for winning and to commit wholly into that objective. And the second is to create the right team to do it all, because if you haven't done everything, you haven't done anything. Doing a piece or a part or one technology does not achieve the goal. The next is to get a clear technical vision, one which, if refined and implemented, will succeed, and then to execute with excellence and impeccability, implement well.
Maybe there's something I'm not clear with yet. How will the Red Rover actually get to the moon?
How the rover gets to the moon is to launch on a conventional rocket, and that gets it up to low Earth orbit where most of the satellites go. Before it even goes around the Earth once, it separates from the launch vehicle and has a rocket that moves it toward the moon. That's called an injection motor for translunar injection. And once it gets headed to the moon, it's going to get there, because the laws of physics and gravity mean that it will either crash or it will land. As it gets close to the moon, it's moving very, very fast, because it had to be moving fast to escape Earth's gravity. And as it's getting close, it will slow down or break. And the braking rocket motor works by turning the direction of the motor right at the moon and firing to slow it down. Then the spacecraft eliminates that part of the rocket motor. So now it's only a lander and a rover, and that uses liquid propulsion, small rocket motors controlled by the rover to balance and point and to slowly descend to the surface of the moon.
Could you give us some insight as to what will be happening next with Red Rover?
The next steps for the rover are to operate it remotely so that it can be physically in a testing area like a western desert, but it could be operated by a team in our headquarters. Other developments are to incorporate the space quality components. So the first prototypes might use a commercial computer, and the space the flight rover has to utilize components that will survive the conditions of space. The next is to refine the mass because it's necessary to make this robot and this lander lighter, and that occurs with each iteration. And then it's necessary to complete the software test and achieve reliability. So all those things are coming up this summer.
As a last question, I'd like to ask how you see the future of field robotics.
Field robotics has already proven itself in farming, mining, defense, space, but there's so much more to come. In the near term, field robotics will take on environmental survey and cleanup, and will make our cars safer and more enjoyable to drive. We'll continue to expand human horizons undersea, out in space, even on a destination as straightforward as the moon. We've not yet discovered or explored caves that are called lava tubes. Nothing has gone to the poles of the moon, to the high mountains, the deep valleys. There's much more to do than has been accomplished.
Thanks, Red, for being here with us on Robots, and I hope to see the Red Rover on the moon soon.
We'll see you from the moon.
That was a great interview, Sabine. I wonder if Red's team will manage to make it to the moon before the deadline. In fact, what do you, our listener, think? Will Google's Lunar XPRIZE be accomplished by the deadline of 2014? Or will all those millions stay in Google's coffers? Let us know what you think through this week's poll posted on our website, www.robotspodcast.com.
After you've voted, feel free to join the discussion on Google's Lunar XPRIZE. and the challenges that remain to be tackled by participating teams.
Personally, I think they should throw in a voice chip to the robot that says, "It's one small step for robot, one giant leap for robot domination," or something like that.
Well, let's see what our listeners have to say.
In any case, that's it for this episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. And while you're there, don't forget to vote in this week's poll and join in the discussion on lunar robotics in our forum.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Reach the Moon with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.